It is Saturday, December 31st, 2011. We are broadcasting live from the central coast of California. This is KUSP Public Radio. We are taking calls in the second half with questions and comments about technology. You can ask us anything you'd like. The phone number is 800-655-5877. And I'll give out that information again when I invite your participation in about half an hour. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on our program, we'll be taking calls with questions and comments about technology in the second half. The phone number is 1-800-655-5877. But in the first half, I'll be inviting you to listen to the geek news from Mr. Ben Jaffe. Ben Jaffe is a freelance media guy and instructor. Hello.
Hey.
And Mr. Miles Elam. Miles Elam is a software engineer and political junkie and new father. Congratulations, Miles.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone.
How is the software bundle going?
There are a few leaks, mm-hmm. but I'm sure with time we'll shore it up and it'll be a very robust piece
now,
of software.
Now, earlier Ben asked if it had sentience yet, and you said yes. It already had sentience, but then it couldn't pass a Turing test. Mm-hmm. So the question is, can it pass a Turing test? Probably not, right?
I guess it depends on, like, I don't think babies can type at a text terminal.
Yeah, the processor is working all right. It's the sensors are a little off, so it'd be hard to get the data back and forth.
Right.
So there's no serial port yet.
It's the user interface that's currently getting to the point of activity, if you will.
Well, the internal processing is going like gangbusters.
Okay.
It has a nice BIOS and basic operating system.
Don't be looking at my BIOS.
Well, congratulations to your new child, the newest of the geek family. And let's go ahead and start with Mr. Ben Jaffe on the news.
Sure. So today is December 31st. Happy almost New Year, everybody. And I have a timely news story, actually. I want to talk about a new calendar that Richard Kahn Henry and Steve H. Hank at these two universities have created, which basically it makes time, the pun that's at the beginning of the article is it makes time stand still. And what they actually mean by that is every year will be the same. So every year Christmas will fall on a Sunday, every single year, right?
Okay, this using their new calendar change.
Exactly, using their new calendar. It's actually kind of cool. I really wish I could say I believe that it could be implemented. But, you know, that would require everyone in the world all deciding to use this calendar.
Considering we can't even agree on...
I think there are some unintended consequences, actually, with regard to Christmas always being on a Sunday. And like, because if that's the case, you're going to start seeing companies go, well, why do we really have the day off for the day after? Because there's always a day off for Christmas or a day off for New Year's. You're like, well, if it's on Sunday, what does it matter?
Would this sync up, meaning that every May 3rd would be a Tuesday every year?
Every May 3rd would be a Thursday every year.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. Every year.
So basically the way it works is, I mean, we have the whole, currently we have the our calendar system, which has a very interesting history. Basically, it was Caesar who instituted it back in 46 BC, and then Pope Gregory made some changes in 1592, skipped 7 days to bring it into sync with mm-hmm. the seasons and everything like that. And we've had this ever since, and we've got the 30 days past September, April, June, and November thing. This calendar basically every January, April, July, and August. That's the first, fourth, 7th and 10th months, right? Mm-hmm. So going by threes would all have let me rephrase that. All of the months except for the 3rd, 6th, 9th and 12th would have 30 days. The 3rd, 6th, 9th and 12th would have 31 days, right?
So it would drastically change how we think about it.
It would indeed. So we would have different numbers of days, right?
I would assume this would get rid of leap years.
No, it wouldn't get rid of leap years. Do you know how they're dealing with leap years?
Yeah.
Because as we know, our Earth year is 365.2422
right.
days
long. Hence 2012
long.
Having a leap year.
Exactly. And hence every like 100 years except in the
right,
an extra leap, whatever. The way they're actually dealing with it is by just adding another month to December every 5 to 7 years. No, adding another week.
Another week.
Another week. Yeah.
How frequently?
December would go, would start on a Thursday on the 1st, go all the way to the 31st would be on a Saturday, just like it is today. And then we would have another week, another week.
How common would this be?
This would happen. The problem with this is that the Gregorian calendar lines up very well with the whole 365.2422 days in a year thing. And so they're basing the extra week years off of the Gregorian calendar. That's the easiest way for us to think
right.
about it. So every single year that the Gregorian calendar begins or ends on a Thursday, which would be like 2015 would be the next one, then 2020, 2026, 2032, 2037. So it kind of fluctuates as far as how many years go between these years, but at least it's a little bit easier to understand. If you were to just take some human being, tabula rasa, and teach them a calendar system, our calendar system wouldn't make very much sense to them.
So
this would make a little more.
So here's the thing. Yay, it would make sense. Woo! Doesn't mean it's going to be implemented, right? Because I mean, we can't even as a world, we can't even figure out daylight savings time. Right,
mm-hmm.
Everybody's out of sync.
And
even,
as there's a counties. Certain country in the world that absolutely refuses to move to metric.
That's right. It's those idiots.
Oh my god, who is that anyway?
And I was also thinking in terms of whenever there's a time zone change in the world, but something like that, the amount of software changes that need to be made has been monumental.
Mm-hmm.
And to have every calendar.
Yeah.
In every computer.
Well, see, every time this calendar stuff comes up, I think about the 2000, you know, when 2000 was happening, the prep
Child's
for
play.
That.
Child's
it was
play.
Totally easy, right?
Child's
but
play.
I remember all the time we spent as programmers trying to fill out the friggin' forms that said, yeah, everything's fine, basically, and look at your code for 2 seconds. But that's nothing compared to trying to change something like this.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely different.
Yeah. So, I mean, we can come up with all kinds of really awesome, very, very...
Geeky
and eloquent, beautiful solutions to these problems.
This is
but they'll never happen.
This is
because...
really the strongest reason to colonize another planet, really, is so that we'll have a dedicated time thing.
But you know what?
It will work.
But you know what? This calendar would be irrelevant in that case because
no,
it's all
fine.
Based around.
I don't
so
care
we would
about
have
this
to create
calendar.
Something
I'm
from scratch.
I'm talking, I love the ideal of a perfect calendar.
A time based upon a radioactive decay amount.
Beautiful, you know? Okay, we touched down on Mars on this date. Okay, that's zero. And then from there on, we're using the orbit.
January 1st, 1970, right?
Exactly perfect. Yeah,
yeah right. Oh, so man. So basically what you're saying is you want a planet so you can design an awesome system,
not
right?
Not me. So that's, people that design this awesome system can implement it.
And you know what I would actually go for is just updating maps.
Just maps? So the maps had what?
Right, because you don't have to have a universal map. You don't have to change every map that's in existence. But
right.
you can make all new maps much more accurate to what the world looks like.
Oh, I like that idea.
That's true, but maps are based on reality and our
time is time.
Yeah, our
time is absolutely real. The unit that we choose
but,
for time is what is arbitrary or reasonably arbitrary.
Yeah. So this would be like saying an inch is actually 20% longer. Let's go update all the maps or something like that. Maybe.
It's definitely map.
It's
definitely
closer.
Changing the key. Yeah.
It's closer because our calendar is just based on arbitrary randomness. It's not actually...
I just love the idea that, you know, it's hard enough for the American population to understand that a tall person is 2 meters. Like that right there, no one knows that, right? Wait, you about 2
What's
meters?
What's a meter?
Are you about two
I meters? Use yards. Thank you.
But you're about 2 meters, right?
Not quite.
Okay.
I'm 6'3", which is...
You're close, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that because you're tall and I just happen to know that 2 meters is tall. But the point is that... We can't even do that. That simple metric transformation, which makes a lot of sense, and most of the world's doing it. The idea of switching time, no way.
Uh huh.
No
well,
way.
We're not. Yeah,
but
I
it's time
know.
To move on.
Oh god, that was
Miles.
Really bad.
So one thing that's been constantly on our minds, and Ben actually has some other information on that as well, is SOPA.
Oh, yeah.
So much on our minds. We've talked about it a lot.
The Stop Online Piracy Act.
Yes. Or Stop Online Privacy Act, depending on how you see it.
Yeah.
Curious thing about that, though, is that it turns out when doing a quick survey that the U.S. House of Representatives that's currently debating SOPA also is guilty of rampant software or copyright piracy.
What do you mean?
From the IP blocks that are assigned to members of Congress?
Uh-huh.
They've been downloading a whole lot of music and movies.
Oh, the irony.
How do you know which blocks of IPs the Congress is using? From like
a company has a block of IPs.
Right. Is this from the governmental blocks?
Yes.
Not from like personal space.
Right.
This is at work.
Yeah.
So you don't know who's doing it within.
Well, they're just looking at it to see if it's appropriate. They're investigating.
Of course.
So you're saying is you look at the IP blocks that are servicing Congress and you find that they're downloading movies and music and
they're using peer-to-peer
software.
They're
acting like an internet user is what you're saying.
Yes.
Using peer-to-peer software.
But the really curious thing about it is that Congress is immune from most cases of being arrested or detained by officers. And there's a good reason behind that.
Right.
You don't want police to like detain someone so they can't do an important vote, that type of thing.
If you're going to infringe on copyright and make lots of copies, you might as well do it at work where you're immune, right? Okay, so go on.
But yeah, it's this curious thing of saying that, yes, we're going to... It's the same thing as workplace laws. Like a lot of the workplace laws that we have in place for sexual harassment and stuff like that do not apply to Congress. Like they don't have to pay overtime. They don't have to... They're not subject to a lot of harassment laws that
sure,
are...
Sure, they passed the law
there,
in the first place.
Like workplace harassment.
Right, sure. Creepy.
And so it's this thing of passing a whole bunch of law... passing a law in this case that is draconian in terms of copyright on the internet. And yet at the same time doing all the things that they're talking about with impunity.
And Ben, you had some more story about SOPA, right?
Yeah. I have some more information about it. So I don't know if you guys made this metaphor in the last couple shows, but one of the representatives actually, I was really impressed to see this metaphor come from one of the representatives who would be, you know, voting on this, made the analogy that it's kind of like you have a town, and you're concerned about all of the activity in the crack house in town. And so instead of doing something to the crack house, you remove all the street signs so no one can find the crack house anymore, right? But at the same time, all the people who aren't going there, who are going to perfectly normal places or whatever, they can't find their way around the town anymore, right? But also, people can still get to the places
the
that
house.
You don't want them to go.
Right.
So that's kind of an interesting analogy. So going.
Meanwhile, Congress is downloading as much crack as they want.
Yeah, well, they've got special maps,
right?
Or I don't know, GPS
or calendars,
whatever. But so there, the metaphor breaks, right? But anyway, this developer who calls himself T-Rizk has made a plugin for Firefox. It's a Firefox add-in. It's called DSOPA. And basically, it allows you to browse the web. If SOPA were implemented, it would allow you to browse the web and not have to rely on...
Now, you're talking about the DNS side of SOPA, but there's actually the IP blocking side, too, which is different. But
that's true.
This is just a side note. Total has nothing to do with the conversation, but I'm just seeing the name T-Rizk and seeing a lot of other names that are similar to that in the, the gray area of computing. And I just can't help but think of the movie Idiocracy. You know, upgrade.
That was the name of the character.
Yeah, the extra D is...
right.
As far as double dose of...
Right, when you get a screen 9 being referenced in the news like that, it's kind of like, wait, what? Or is that a real person?
Yeah, it's almost the news out of a movie, right?
Yeah, footnote over. Go ahead.
I recently saw... Here's another footnote. I recently saw a footnote that said... We were going to call this section the introduction, but we didn't want nobody to read it. So we felt we could say that this is actually the introduction in a footnote because no one reads footnotes either. That was the footnote.
That's pretty cool.
Which is fantastic.
Your double negative had me twitch in my head.
Well, everyone can rewind the podcast but you.
Also, more companies are dropping out of SOPA support.
A lot more companies are dropping out, which is great, but it's also kind of perplexing that they made the decision to support SOPA in the first place. You know what I mean? Like, a company won't just, by default, support SOPA. They have to decide to support SOPA, to be on the list of people who support SOPA. So that's no good. But the companies that are backing out are Nintendo, Sony, and EA in this particular article.
It's a big group.
So that's a big group, group that's all the gaming people, right? And Wikipedia had made comments. I think I misreported on this last week. I had said that Wikipedia had decided to leave GoDaddy. What actually had happened is Wikipedia had implied that they are probably going to leave GoDaddy, and recently it was confirmed by Jimmy Wales on Wikipedia that they are indeed leaving. Same with imageur.com.
Mm-hmm. Imager.
I never knew how to pronounce that. Now I should have asked you. Anyway, so they're a big image hosting site. Unfortunately, GoDaddy has gotten a lot of free press because there's all of this boycott, GoDaddy, da-da-da-da-da. Some people have thought, I need to register some domains. And those people, some of those people have actually chosen to register at GoDaddy. So GoDaddy has been taking a big hit in terms of users leaving because they were supporting SOPA. They have reversed their position. Mm-hmm. But again, for a domain host to support that bill in the first place is really sketchy.
Well, they were supporting it because they were exempt from it. They helped co-author it, and one of the provisions of it was they were not subject to it.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's
super sketchy.
Yeah, GoDaddy has a long history of sketchiness. This is, I'm afraid I wasn't here last week when people were talking about which Reddit to go through, because I'm sitting there at home.
But do you still
going,
use Joker?
Yeah, I still
That's
use Joker.
I put up on the website.
Just because, and the thing is, most European hosting facilities, they're subject to European privacy laws.
Right.
And so they have policies that are all generally better than the ones that are in US.
What's
US
the domain name for that?
What's what?
What's the domain name for Joker?
Joker.com.
Joker.com. So here's the thing. The other site, the other domain register that we talked about from the story, we've actually said 7 times on air today. I've been counting as you said the name of it. And that's the reason why they're getting publicity, because then people want to get a DNS. They go, oh, what was it again? Ben said that
the fallibility of human memory, right?
Right.
So the one we like is you like Joker.com. That's
right, but
there's a whole lot of them.
Yeah.
There you go, Ben. Thanks.
There's a whole... Hey, why so serious? there are a whole lot of registrars out there. I just have personally...
You just have your domains there. Yeah.
Well, there's... I have an issue with the domain registrar that shall go nameless. we don't mention his name.
The Leave Mommy?
Vold host.
For many, many years.
It's been bad business.
They've had some sketchy issues
really
and some curious business practices. And one of the things about SSL, for example, has been that, SSL is you identify this entity to say this is an actual entity out there, and it's secure communication, so you know they're talking to them.
Right.
And the registrar that shall go nameless from now on was the first of the group that went like, oh, we'll just give an SSL cert as long as you pay us money. And that was what spawned the whole tiering of SSL certs, where some of them, the low-cost cert versus we actually check out to see if the company is legit, and caused the non-trivial amount of confusion among users with regard to that. So I have issues beyond SOPA with them, and I think SOPA was just the icing on the cake.
I agree. You know, it's one of the things, last time I mentioned this, I mentioned that the advertising for that company seems a little creepy. You know, they always are doing these ads that are like women prancing around. It's a very sexualized ad for domain names, which I'm sure works in some sense because sex sells. But it's that level of, let's see, how do we sell domain names? Let's throw, you know, half naked people. That'll do it. That right there is kind of like, eh. Like
it goes further than that.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, okay.
Just that polishing of the company to me feels a little creepy.
No,
it's like Zynga.
There's something more to that story though. Because the CEO of the company that shall remain nameless got his start selling online Bibles.
Really?
Yeah.
Was he doing it with sex?
he was selling Bibles, so yes.
What?
What?
Have you read the Bible?
Oh, it's true. It was all those begots. They had to be doing something. The other company that felt that way to me for years, and I didn't really have any reason for it, was Zynga, the company that makes Farmville. Farmville,
and who now will remain nameless.
Yeah, well,
yeah, they're pretty evil too.
We'll mention them a lot because they're just bad. Everyone that knows Farmville hates it, I think, unless they play it. But, you know, it's that thing where all your friends were pestering you on Facebook to join this game. It was, like, really annoying. You finally turned off your filters. And it was kind of that joke, you know, Farmville, yeah, yeah, right. I don't want to play that game. I'm sick of it. And it represented that kind of nastiness of an automatic thing posting to representing you on your Facebook.
Of course, now I feel totally elitist because we're like, oh, the unwashed masses. It's like when AOL users got onto the internet. It's like, oh, I can't believe, oh, God.
So, anyways, Zynga, of course, went public, and we... Ben?
Oh, no. I just wanted to liken Farmville to... Did you guys ever see the Star Trek The Next Generation episode called The Game, where everyone starts playing this game and there's this little thing that
goes
in front of their
eye? Hey.
A little visor. And then, like, everyone's playing it and it turns out that the... Well, actually, never mind. I'm not going to spoil
it.
It's
a great episode.
Go watch that episode because it's eerily relevant in so many ways.
Reverting you guys are dorks.
Zynga, a while ago, before it went public, said the CEO decided to yank some shares of developers who had stock options early on. It was one of the collections. And they were pulling it. And I remember, Miles, we were pretty ticked off the company was doing that. It seemed like a really horrible thing to do with developers.
Oh, no, I wasn't personally ticked off. I don't have a personal stake in it. It's more along the lines of...
That's just bad.
You just want to do a public shaming.
Yeah,
you know, like,
shame.
Can anyone...
So now Zynga is one of the IPOs that is not doing well. Its selling price right now is lower. Now, of course, they raised something like $7 billion, so it's not like they did badly, but their stock has dropped.
Yes, but at the same time, they have more stock.
Yeah, that's true.
the CEOs still and doing executives fine. Have the CEOs plenty are doing of stock fine. Because they took it all from their employees.
Let's move on. It's your turn, Miles.
So since we're talking about SOPA, I figured we're coming into the middle of the show and I'll just do a preemptive geek bit, which is Richard Feynman talking about SOPA.
Really?
Yeah, which is really curious because, you know, he's no longer alive.
Was he joking?
Well, he was making a speech about science and the value of science, and he made the speech in 1955, so over 50 years ago. But the text of it, I think, is still pertinent today.
And in a second, you'll hear what that text is. But first, I want to let you know that Geek Speak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with Dave Lawrence and is used with permission. The geeks today are Ben Jaffe, Miles Elam. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me, these geeks sit. But in the other room, where you can't hear them from the mics, but you can if you call, is Rick. And Rick will take your calls with questions and comments about technology and pipe you into the showroom so we can hear you and chat with you about your computer problems or any other things you'd like to talk about technology. The phone number, 1-800-655-5877. Again, 1-800-655-5877. I'll give out that information again in just a second. GeekSpeak on QSP is supported by Cruzeo Internet, offering commuters quiet drop-in office space with a 10 gigabit fiber internet connection at 877 Cedar Street in downtown Santa Cruz. Information at cruzeo.com. What did Mr. Feynman say?
We are at the very beginning of time for the human race. It is not unreasonable that we grapple with problems, but there are tens of thousands of years in the future. Our responsibility is to do what we can, learn what we can, improve the solutions, and pass them on. It is our responsibility to leave the people of the future a free hand. In the impetuous youth of humanity, we can make grave errors that can stunt our growth for a long time. This we will do if we say we have the answers now, so young and ignorant as we are. If we suppress all discussion, all criticism, proclaiming, "This is the answer, my friends, man is saved," we will doom humanity for a long time to the chains of authority, confined to the limits of our present imagination. It has been done so many times before. It is our responsibility as scientists, knowing that the great progress that comes from a satisfactory philosophy of ignorance, the great progress which is the fruit of freedom of thought, to proclaim the freedom, the value of this freedom, to teach how doubt is not to be feared, but welcomed and discussed, and to demand this freedom as our duty to all coming generations. And I only wish that I could have done it in a Brooklyn accent, so I could have been much more like...
Richard Feynman! Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jay.
Awesome. Ben, got a geek bit?
I've got a geek bit. I also have a quote today. This is a theme. This is Bill Bryson from A Short History of Nearly Everything. He says, Every atom you possess has almost certainly passed through several stars and been part of millions of organisms on its way to becoming you. We are each so atomically numerous and so vigorously recycled at death that a significant number of our atoms, up to a billion for each of us, it has been suggested, probably once belonged to Shakespeare. A billion more each came from Buddha and Genghis Khan and Beethoven and any other historical figure you care to name. So, we are all reincarnations, though short-lived ones. When we die, our atoms will disassemble and move off to find new uses elsewhere, as part of a leaf or other human being or drop of dew.
That's awesome. Who's that?
Bill Bryson.
Bill Bryson.
And that is what gives me awe in the world.
Very cool. Thank you very much. We are taking calls with questions and comments about technology. Got a good quote for us? If it's geeky enough, you say it on air. 1-800-655-5877. Again, the number is 1-800-655-5877. Did you get a new tech, geeky tech gift recently? Call us and tell us about it. We'll take your calls with any comments about technology, any questions you have about technology. 1-800-655-5877. GeekSpeak on KSP is supported by Dr. Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in handcrafted dentistry from start to finish, using digital technology for less radiation and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. Information at 423-2447. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KSP. This is GeekSpeak. I normally say in the middle of the show that you can go to geekspeak.org and learn all about what we're talking about, but right now geekspeak.org does not do anything because of SOPA. No, not really. But it's effectively the same thing. The machine is totally
down. We sure totally said we were taking it down in protest of SOPA.
That's amazing, yeah.
Well, no one will listen to the podcast, so we could edit it. I will do my darndest to get this podcast up sometime in the near future and the website as well.
So if you're listening to this and if you're listening to this later on in the future and you're looking for the podcast, yeah, then you've already found it.
That's right.
Right.
Hey, if you want to tell someone to listen to this show, have them email us instead.
You know, I think human beings are so predictable. You said geekspeak.org is down. And so what was the first thing I did? I opened up a web browser and I went to geekspeak.org and I was like, oh man, it's down. Why isn't it working?
Because the shoemaker's children go barefoot.
That's right. That's right. I did get my mom's website back up, so it was a good holiday thing. Oh well. as we wait for calls, would one of you guys like to go ahead and do another news story?
Yeah, I'll talk about exoplanets really quickly. Okay. Just that we have two new candidates. Now, we colloquially call these discoveries, but really these are candidates because we're only using one piece of hardware to detect them. That's the Kepler satellite, which on several previous shows I've discussed how it works and everything. It's really cool if you want to look it up. But we actually found this star system, you know, within the star system called Kepler 20. We found Kepler 20c, 20d, 20e, and 20f. Astronomers are really good at naming things, right?
Sequential.
Sequential, I know.
Well, that's the funny thing. Are they actually in the order that they appear in orbit? Because, for example, with Saturn, you have the A through F rings, but they are not in order. They're in order of discovery. So you look at it, you're like, F ring, C ring, B.
You back.
Oh, my God. You know, you can make a melody with that if you're a musician. And that's probably how I would remember it. But anyway.
Did I ever come across something that was the music of Saturn or the music of various celestial bodies?
Yeah, it was like they took some kind of reading which was really low in the radio something something, and then they sped it up like 15 million times and they're like, this is the music of Saturn.
I have, on that note, I have today's topic, today's title for the show.
What is
Tangent.
It?
Go on, please.
I just wanted to mention how big these things are, because they're actually quite small, and that's fantastic that we're detecting these exoplanets that are near the Earth's radius, which is amazing. Kepler 20c is 3 times Earth's radius. 20d is 2¾ times Earth's radius. Here's the news, though. Kepler 20e is about 0.87 times the radius of the Earth. So it's actually smaller than the radius of the Earth.
That's cool.
In another star system way out there.
Smaller than Venus, yet larger than Mars.
Pretty cool.
Indeed, indeed.
In another solar system.
And then 20f is a little bit larger, so it's about the size of Earth. In related space news,
only larger.
It's ever so slightly larger. It's about the same. plus or minus 2 centimeters. I don't know. Also, just brief mention, Voyager is...
Still going?
It's still going. Yeah. We basically...
Still voyaging?
We took this thing and we shot it out into space, and it's been traveling away from us toward the... So our solar system is defined by the radiation, or the waves coming from the sun, right?
Right.
The solar winds. And it turns out it's actually shaped kind of like a comet. So we're actually going toward the head of the comet, the shortest distance out of the solar system. When we launched this back in, what, 1970-something, was it?
I don't know.
Yeah, something.
Just because I was born in the 70s, unlike you, man.
Maybe.
Doesn't mean I know.
maybe the 80s. Anyway, when we launched this thing, we didn't really know how big the solar system is, because it's actually bigger than Pluto. It's defined as when the pressure... Pluto's not a planet, you know.
I mean, the orbit of Pluto.
The orbit of Pluto, yes. So anyway, I guess the point is Voyager is almost out of the solar system.
Very cool.
So once it gets out of the solar system, we'll see kind of what's really
out
there.
When you say almost, do you mean 10 years, 20 years?
They're not sure.
Well, that's the thing, though. We don't know much about the edge of the solar system, right. What happens there. That's why we have probes out there.
Right.
And so it has, from what I understand, passed the heliopause. So right. That point when the cosmic wind and the solar
wind
hasn't meet.
It's almost there.
Oh, it hasn't.
It is almost there. It's getting to the point where it soon will. And they don't know if it'll pass it, very, very, very soon, or in 3 years, or in 5 years, but probably within 5 years.
Heliosphere, Miles?
Heliopause.
What is it?
Heliopause is where the solar wind, which is pushing out, that's where we get solar wind, when solar flares coming out, and that's that outward
the sun's
energy
effect on particles.
The outward energy discharge from the sun outward.
It's got to be particles.
Yeah, I'm being verbose,
right?
Now.
Yeah.
And yet there is a cosmic wind, in other words,
from the
galaxy in general. Mm-hmm. And where those two meet, it's kind of like a boat going through water. You have these...
Or like a river meeting the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking like when the boat hits the water, where you see those... when the bow creates
bow
those ripples as you're going through.
Mm. All right.
Another way to think of it is a pressure system, where the pressure of the solar system is counteracted by the pressure going the other way, right?
Right.
Wherever that line is, that's the edge of our solar system. And one of the things that they're excited about discovering is they think probably, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but like 5 to 15 million years ago, there were a bunch of supernova. And they're kind of interested in looking to see if there's debris and things like that, like little particles and whatnot from those supernova just outside of the solar system. And we won't get there until we get past that boundary. So,
earlier
we'll
you were mentioning particles coming, your quote for the Geek Bit talked about billions of atoms from Shakespeare in all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of how small atoms are, it's one of the things I heard, which I love, is if you took one cup of water, and you mixed it in all the oceans of the world, all the waters of the world, and you then scooped another cup of water out, there's like 13 atoms of the original cup would be in there.
God, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's just amazing.
Oh, just one quick
sure,
tidbit,
yeah,
because
yeah,
we're talking about Voyager and we're talking about all these things and finding exoplanets. I'm like, just want everyone to understand that NASA's budget, not for this year, but for the last 50 years combined.
All of NASA's budget, all the money we spent on NASA.
Right. Is less than what we spent on the TARP bailouts. So when you think of $700 billion,
that's all the money we've ever spent on space.
that's more than
that's we've ever spent to go to the moon, to
all
handle
that,
all
everything.
These Mars probes, to do everything that NASA has done.
To build the moon? Oh, wait, did we do that?
To go to the moon.
We went to the moon.
Oh, we built the pyramids.
Good said.
No, that was aliens.
Good said.
Onward, Mark from North Virginia. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Hello. How are you doing?
Quite well.
Fantastic.
So you're from Northern Virginia. I said North Virginia, but of course that would be really strange. Northern Virginia. Hi, welcome to Geek Speak. Thanks for joining us.
Hi there. Yeah, I've got a question about IPv6 and the impact of it on homeowners. I've been doing a little research into existing routers that are available to the homeowner in the consumer price range, and the various manufacturers that I've looked at, such as Netgear, SMC, etc., It seems like very few of the existing routers will actually support IPv6, and I've seen no indication that they intend to update any firmware.
Yeah.
So are people going to have to go out and buy new routers?
It depends on which router you have. If you bought an Apple router in the last 5 years, no. If you are hacking your router so that it runs Tomato or DDWRT, those aftermarket firmwares, like you're an advanced user, then no.
You'll have
IPv6 support already.
And keep in mind that these large ISPs that service all these homes, the DSL providers, the cable providers, internet providers in general, they know that they can't roll out and force IPv6 on their customers if the customers don't have the hardware for it. So they won't. There's backward support tunneling for IPv6 where the internet at large could be switching over to IPv6. In fact, it is, and there's transfer points that make IPv4 still work. It's a really a mess.
Yeah, you have a router that just does B or G, like you have a BG router, chances are it doesn't support IPv6 and never will. If you have an N router, especially one you've bought in the last year, chances are getting better that it does have support, although you may or may not use it because of, as you said, the ISP issue.
I mean, the other thing that's kind of odd is that whatever your connection point to the internet is, you know, if you've got a modem or something, normally what you do is you have your modem and or you have a modem that connects the actual protocol that connects to your ISP, and then you have a router. Sometimes they're built in the same thing. Sometimes the router's behind. There's no reason why the modem itself could be connected to a network on the ISP side that would be IPv6, and internally you'd be IPv4. That could happen at that point. So you could still run IPv4 in your home network and then access the internet in general, though you would be your packets would be transferred. It'd be better to be an IPv6 native.
If you want to know a list of routers that support IPv6 today,
Wikipedia?
No, on the contrary. Well, I found it through Google, but still. Okay. www.sixxs.net.
I've been to that website, and I found it to be incomplete.
Yes, it is, because as new routers come out, and like it's always going to be just as good as the people who contribute to it.
For example, it didn't list a single Netgear router when I last looked at it.
Well, there's a couple things going on. It's possible that no Netgear routers actually do.
Well, Netgear's got on their website, they've got a list of about 5 or 7 routers that they say will.
That's good. I'm glad that they're finally using it as a marketing tool. That's the thing that was frustrating early on, is that the companies might actually have it in plan and whatever, but they're not making it public because no one's looking and no one cares. And it's one of those things where as soon as customers care that the IPv6 is supported by the router, then the companies are going to start promoting that as a feature of their product, and you know, making sure their BIOS updates support it. I mean, the thing is, right now, if you have an IPv6 system, you can't connect to your ISP. ISP is just, I mean, there's only beta programs going out. We should probably give a real, I mean, I know, Mark, you're totally aware of what we're talking about, but not everyone that's listening does. Miles, do you have something to say about that?
Yes. Actually, there is a website called www.ipv6ready.org. And that one, you can put a vendor name in, such as Netgear, and it will give you back the...
And it's an organization.
Models that they support, including the date that they started supporting them.
We're going to have to put all the show notes up.
A question that I would ask, and this is almost like the new iPhone 4GS with Siri. Is IPv6 really something that they could support in the older routers with a firmware upgrade, but they're just choosing, no, we would prefer you buy a new router?
I would say that probably yes. But the chipsets, okay. It's a tricky.
The hardware, like the networking hardware, almost certainly could.
Right.
Because the network hardware doesn't really care what protocol you're putting over that Ethernet. But some of those routers are very limited in the amount of RAM and the amount of storage space they have. So some of those firmwares, in order to support IPv6, would have to have a... much larger networking stack.
But even if the hardware could handle it, the time and energy to make sure that hardware could run IPv6, test it and all that, doesn't make any sense for a company who's no longer manufacturing that hardware. Let's say they've built thousands of them, they want to sell them, and they're still selling them, but the newest product that they have does support IPv6, and they're looking at 3 years out at being important, there's no reason for them to backwards tool a BIOS for their older hardware.
Yeah, and
so that's the reason why you're not
going to
see it.
And the cheapest end routers that support DDWRT are somewhere in the range of $40.
Now, Miles keeps on talking about in-routers. In-router router means a wireless router that supports the in protocol, which they're not connected, right, necessarily. You can get a non-wireless router and still deal with IPv6.
Right, but if you're getting a new one, I would suggest getting a new one.
I'm an unwireless router. I've got a couple where I've turned the Wi-Fi off to get the functions that I want.
Get better speeds and definitely.
I'm looking at is I've got 5 routers on my network here at home, and you'd say, $40. Well, it's now $40 times 5.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you've got a pretty complex network at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just tried to hack into it.
I bet you're pretty safe. Mark, thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Take care. Yeah.
Although I would say once you start having that many routers, if you have them in a lot of different places, so you have, the desk here has 5 ports, and then over there, you're just needing a switch, not necessarily a router.
Yeah.
That's one thing. But if you're having that many routers that you're actually using to route packets.
That's a lot of overhead.
I'd start to wonder whether or not it's just worth it getting a reasonable ATX, desktop system, putting a bunch of network cards into the PCI slots, and then actually setting up a router.
I get that, Miles. That makes sense. But you got to keep in mind that if you're looking for a security perspective, it makes sense to have a stack of routers, a whole bunch of subnets, right? And each one of those routers is a different manufacturer. And now, if there's a vulnerability in the BIOS, there's no way that someone's going to get all. You're really secure. It's kind of like being in a bunker. I would say you're slow too.
Well, the thing is, a computer doesn't have. I mean, well, the operating system is the firmware.
Yeah,
which means you're updating it more likely.
Yeah, more likely you're updating it. But if you only have one point of security breach failure, you're sitting in a situation like the GeekSpeak server, right?
Oh, you're talking about a specific driver that's going.
I don't know. Right, we'll go on. Speaking, if you didn't listen to last week's show, the GeekSpeak server was being administered by another administrator, not one of the geeks, and he decided that it would be a good idea to set the password for the root to password 123, and then left it like that for a day, and an automatic bot got in and rooted the machine. And
if Lyle just said your password on the air, change it.
If you've heard your password on the air today, change it.
12345. I have the same password on my luggage.
My password's 1. Just 1.
That way, no one's ever going to guess that.
Except, actually, no one will let you use that.
Oh, that's actually kind of cool.
We haven't done passwords.
If it was 1, but you have to choose the language, and you're typing out the UTF-8 codes.
Yeah, that's good. How about let's do this? Passwords should be easy for you to remember. Buffering them with a lot more content is a really good way for things not to guess them. So let's say you really want to use your cat's name, and your cat's name is Spot. I don't know why you have a cat named Spot.
Because your data.
If you then use the password Spot, and then you put 15 periods after it, that's a pretty good password, assuming that someone doesn't guess that. But that's
a
really good password.
Even better is, Spot is my awesome cat who I really like to hang out with.
As a full sentence.
Yeah, right. Even with spaces.
That's my password. Okay, let's go on to Marie. From Salinas, Marie Ellen, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, thanks. I want to get a scanner. I want to get all my paper onto a small storage device. Mm-hmm. I want to know if I have to have a computer to do that.
Meaning you have to have a computer to manage the content after you've scanned it, or to even actually scan it?
No, I don't. I'm not really concerned about that. I just want to get the paper onto a small storage device, period. And so do I have to have a laptop, some kind of a brain to process this? Or
yes.
Can I just do it?
Yeah, the simple answer is yes, you need a computer to be the intermediary between the scanning and the storage.
Right.
But I bet you anything there is products out there that that have like a hard drive computer scanner all built into one. And the reason
I want to find.
Yeah, they do exist, but it's not going to be a cheap solution for you, right? Because that product is not a mass consumer product, probably. And if it is, it's probably not very good. So what you kind of need to do is kind of get your computer, your computer and storage can come together, though you need a backup as well, and then your scanning device. And you could probably walk out the door with all of that, a backup hard drive, a new computer, and a scanner for under $1,000. And I would say you could probably do it for under. Yeah. And so paper looks really good, doesn't it? And doesn't paper look really good to you now?
No, it's even uglier now because I'm stuck, okay?
How many pieces of paper are we talking about?
Oh, you know, boxes of files that I don't want to have, you know, have in my house. I want to archive them
and
put the thumb drive or whatever it's called into a safe deposit box.
I would say that a camera is the right to go with this.
Really?
Yeah, because like right now my iPhone on my phone's camera, which is what, 6 megapixel? 4 megapixel, I can't remember. I can take a picture of a full 8.5 by 11 or 11 by 7, you know, large piece of paper even, and still read the text off of it, no problem. And that image is pretty small. So if you got like a 16 gigabyte card, which is just a card, and then took the pictures of every single page, you'd get what you're looking for and then make a duplicate.
Yeah, but that's
hey, James,
You're talking about a lot of pages though, right?
Yeah, that's going to be slow.
True, and it's only one.
No,
side
that's
going to
be fascinating.
Scanners do two sides of the page.
No, scanners are not faster than that.
Yeah, a sheet feeder.
Why are we so loud?
Okay, a sheet feeder would be so much more convenient to be able to drop in 10 at a time, let it go through, drop in another 10.
Or more than 10.
Yeah, but a sheet feeding scanner is pretty expensive that doesn't jam.
No. They've got pretty cheap ones. They've got ones that are like, I'm holding in my hands. They're like the size of a MacBook Pro or smaller. Yeah. I don't actually know any brands, but I know several people who have different versions of these or different
so
brands.
Where do I find it?
I would search for self-feeding scanner or
sheet-fed
like
scanner.
You're not solving the storage and computer problem, too.
Okay, so if you wanted to do the... First, I want to say, if you want to do the whole camera or iPhone thing, two things you need to do. Find some way to make the camera still, completely
still.
Yeah,
definitely on a tripod.
Don't hold it manually because then you'll get blurry photos. You won't notice, and then you'll need to document later, and it'll be all blurry.
Yeah.
Second of all, make sure that you set up a lot of light in that room because if you're taking low exposure photos, you'll have the same kind of issue, right?
Now, keep in mind, I've done a bit of this kind of work before, and one of the things that's beneficial of a camera versus a scanner, I was taking pictures of stamp collection, right? Is that you don't have to separate out the pages from the book. You can actually flip the book and hold it and take a shot with a tripod, with good lighting. And the thing that's also, I mean, one of the things that people are always trying to do is OCR this stuff. That's the bigger problem that you're going to have, no matter what you do with this. After you get all these files on the computer, how do you access them? How do you find them again? And that's the thing about archiving.
And that's in the future sometime. I really don't care. All I want is to have this stuff, you know, in a device.
No, I get that idea. But if you took all of the full... boxes and boxes of folders you had right now, took all the pages and shuffled them and stuck them in a safe somewhere. Later, it would be almost impossible to find one of those sheets. And that's a problem that you're going to emerge once you do this, if you don't do some kind of tagging and referencing as you do it. Miles, you have an idea for her for hardware?
Well, I am seeing a sheet-fed scanner. I don't want to do advertisements on air, but it's, you know, they're up to 20 pages per minute.
That's pretty fast.
And you're just not going to get anywhere near that speed if you have a tripod with an iPhone.
I agree, but that's not going to actually work because unless you're doing a stack of really clean paper, that thing's going to jam and stop.
No, you can actually feed, like there's somewhere you can actually feed in envelopes, you can feed in sheets of paper that are not just 8.5 by 11. It has to not be really, really wrinkled, obviously, but if you have a wrinkled piece of photo or a piece of paper, then you'll have to just feed it in manually.
And actually, I have a question before the caller. Are these papers that you have that you want to, these documents, are they already in boxes or in file cabinets?
Yeah.
Okay, so they're pretty flat as it is. They're pretty well pressed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
do
I don't know that.
Do they have folds?
They do have some folds, but really most of it is just 8.5 by 11 straight away. Flat.
Nice and clean. Flat.
I think sheet-fed would actually be your way to go.
Yeah, if you had staples, you would have to get rid of the staples anyway.
What about a service for her? What about going to a service?
For a photo?
That's another option.
Yeah. So you wouldn't have to buy the hardware.
I worked for a company that did do this as a service, but they were doing it for the company was called CompuLink, but they were also doing it for companies. I don't know what the pricing was going to be like, but they charged like for the number of documents that you had, and then you end up. This was 15 years ago, and they would give you back like a worm drive or a series of CD-ROM discs.
Uh-huh. But you're gonna
so
you know,
today you'd have different media.
Yeah, don't keep all your content just on optical drives, like people do backups on DVDs or CDs. I would try to do more than one type of media type, right? Mm-hmm. So have a thumb drive and a DVD drive. Now you can get them to give you a DVD and then copy all that off to a thumb drive. But you're also going to have a lot of storage on this stuff.
DVDs are pretty sketchy. I would do thumb drives or some kind of solid state storage because that's going to be more reliable than hard drives or anything else you're going
to
choose.
Absolutely. Yeah, the advantage to the service, though, is that they also do OCR and they'd be able to get it done faster than you could. But
that means taking the image and making it text for
you. So you can search it, maybe,
which is really useful.
So if I had a laptop, if I could use someone's laptop to
yeah, that's all you would need is just some computer.
Okay, but then I could use their laptop to
run this
the intermediary or whatever you call it.
Yeah, that runs the scanner. You know, the scanner is just a tool, right? And it's
a
computer.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah, and if you have a really old computer that you don't, that isn't your primary desktop, I mean, that would be a great workhorse to do this type of work. Just be able to throw data onto
it. If the newer DocuScanners had support for that OS. Here's the thing. It's not going to be this magical wonderland. This is going to be a very hard, time-consuming process unless you throw some money out to have someone else do it. So just keep in mind, it's not... I love the idea of getting rid of paper. All companies do. And the truth is, we produce more paper now than we ever have. So keep in mind that it's not an easy thing to do. And the other thing to do, if you know librarians, anybody in the library business knows a lot about this kind of topic, too, because that archiving, management stuff is a big business. Thank you so much for the call. Good luck.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Well, we have a few more minutes left in the show. Miles, I believe it's your turn for the news story, sir.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, you have others. I saw that your list was long. If not, Ben's sitting right here.
I've got a question for you guys.
All right.
What are you looking forward to for 2012?
Well, let me first say...
Because that's tomorrow, right?
Let me first say, for the 2011, we did a show early in 2011, and we made a... what is it when you make a plan for the year?
Prediction?
No.
Resolution.
Resolution, thank you. So last year's resolution for me was to take a new portrait of a new person every day of the entire year.
That feels like a month ago.
Yeah, it was a year ago. I've done it. As long as I get a picture today.
That would be horrible if you didn't.
I can't tell you how much I'm looking forward to not taking a picture tomorrow. I've been carrying around my camera. I've bought a new camera throughout the year. And I take a portrait of a new person every day of the year. A few times it was people that I don't know, and they didn't know me because I was too embarrassed to ask. And it's like them across the park. So I don't know if I can actually ever publish that one because I don't know who that is. But most of them are like store owners, people that I know regularly, friends. You guys are both part of it, of course.
So next week we're going to announce our New Year's resolutions. And if you have your own New Year's resolution, please call in. Let us know what you're doing.
And Miles, your resolution for 2011 was to teach math every week.
Yes.
How'd you do?
Well, it's hard to say because I work in programming. So technically, I was teaching some math content to someone, I kind of failed.
Geek Speak on KSP is supported by Alec and Claude Webster, with a reminder that if 1 in 10 Americans regularly use public transit, reliance on foreign oil could decline by more than 40%. Learn more about other ways in Monterey County to get to work at mst.org. Geek Speak on KOSP is supported by the Monterey Fire Safe Council, working with businesses, homeowners, government, and fire protection agencies to identify and reduce the risk of catastrophic wildfires throughout Monterey County. Learn more at firesafemonterey.org. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at kosp.org. This is Geek Speak. We are normally at geekspeak.org with all your questions and comments all week long, but right now our server's down. But if you'd like to email us, you're welcome to do so. My email is, you can find it at lyle.troxell.com. Thanks, Ben and Miles, for being here today with me. I really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.